Welcome and thank you for standing by. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. All participants are in listen-only mode until the question and answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to John Bateman. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you and good morning. Thanks for joining this monthly climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm John Bateman with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. If you have any additional questions after the conclusion of today's call, my colleague John Leslie and I can both be reached by email at, and I will spell it, nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. Today's update will feature three short presentations followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. A copy of the presentation our speakers will follow can be downloaded from the link in the media advisory. If you don't have that link, I will spell it for you now so you can download it. It is https://www.ncdc.noaa.gov/sotc/briefings. That's briefings. With that, I will introduce our speakers. The first presenter is Ira Sanchez-Lugo, a climatologist with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the October 2021 U.S. and Global Climate Report, as well as the latest drought monitor update. Our second presenter is Allison Cobb, a research meteorologist from the Center for Western Weather and Water Extremes, who will provide a review of the exceptional atmospheric river event that brought record rainfall and triggered multiple landslides across parts of California last month. And our third presenter is Jonna Infante, a meteorologist at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Niño-La Niña update, as well as the U.S. temperature, precipitation, and drought outlooks for the months of December, January, and February. Our first speaker will be Ira from NCEI.
Thank you, John, and thanks to everyone who joined in. I'm going to go ahead and start on slide two to look at the global temperatures for the month of October. The October 2021 global surface temperature was 0.89 degrees Celsius or 1.60 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and this was the fourth highest for October since global records began in 1880. As you can see from the map on the top left, the month of October was characterized by much warmer than average temperatures across much of the global land and ocean surfaces, with record warm October temperatures across parts of North America, South America, Northern Africa, Southern Asia, as well as across parts of the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans. Meanwhile, we did see cooler than average conditions across parts of the central and eastern tropical Pacific Ocean, as well as parts of the northern Pacific Ocean, western North America, Greenland, and across parts of Asia, southern Africa, and western Australia. But as you can see from the map, no land or ocean areas had a record cold October. The unusually warm temperatures that we saw across much of the northern hemisphere land, this resulted in the warmest October on record for the Northern Hemisphere land, and this surpassed the previous record that was set in 2019. Also, North America had its second warmest October on record, and this was just shy of tying the record that was set in 1963 by 0.03 degrees Celsius or 0.05 degrees Fahrenheit. South America had its third warmest October on record, while Africa had its seventh warmest and Asia had its 12th warmest. And even though Europe and Oceania did have an above average temperature during the month, they both had the coolest October temperature since 2016. Now looking at the year to date, The first 10 months of the year were characterized by warmer than average conditions across much of the globe, as seen on the map. We did see record warm January through October temperatures that were present across parts of Northern Africa, Southern and Eastern Asia, and across parts of the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. Cooler than average year-to-date temperatures were present across the Central and Eastern Tropical Pacific Ocean. However, again, no land or ocean areas had a record cold January through October temperature. And averaged as a whole, the January through October temperature was 0.84 degrees Celsius or 1.51 degrees Fahrenheit above average. And this was the sixth warmest January through October period on record. Moving now to slide number three to look ahead. So the year 2021 is virtually certain to rank among the 10 warmest years on record globally, with the highest probability of ranking as the sixth warmest year on record. Moving now to slide number four, looking now to taking a closer look at the climate conditions across the U.S. For October, the average temperature for the U.S. was 57 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 2.9 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and this was the sixth warmest October for the nation. Looking at the maps, we see that temperatures were above average across much of the central and eastern contiguous U.S. Statewide, we had Ohio and Maryland that had their warmest October on record, while Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Maine had each the second warmest October on record. The warmth that we saw across much of the eastern half of the contiguous U.S. was mainly due to very warm minimum temperatures, with several states across the Midwest and Northeast having their warmest October minimum temperature on record. There were some areas that had below average October temperatures, and these were present across portions of the Southwest. Looking at precipitation, the precipitation total for the contiguous U.S. was 3.11 inches, which is 0.95 inch above average, and this was the ninth wettest October on record. Precipitation was above average across parts of the West, the Plains, the Great Lakes, Midwest, Southeast, and the Northeast. Statewide, again, California and Illinois had their fourth wettest October record, average across portions of the Southwest. I will briefly mention that there were several atmospheric river events that occurred from October 19 through 26 that brought record rainfall to portions of California. While the parts of the West were experiencing these atmospheric river events, the East Coast did experience an early fall nor'easter that brought high winds and heavy rain to parts of New Jersey and from New Jersey to Massachusetts. Moving now to slide number five to look at the U.S. year-to-date temperatures. The year-to-date temperature for the U.S. was 57 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 2 degrees Fahrenheit above average. And this was the ninth warmest January through October period for the nation. Above average temperatures were observed across much of the lower 48, as you can see from the map. Statewide, Maine had its second warmest January through October period, while Vermont and New Hampshire had their third warmest year-to-date period. However, no state had a statewide average temperature that was below average. For the year-to-date national temperature, precipitation, it was 26.74 inches or 1.38 inches above average, and this was the 32nd wettest October. Above average precipitation was present across from the Deep South to the Great Lakes and into the Northeast. Third wettest January through October period, while Louisiana had its fourth wettest on record. Below average precipitation was observed across parts of the West and the Northern Plains, and we had Montana that had its fourth driest January through October period on record. Moving now to slide number six to look at the U.S. drought. This map was, the map that's on the slide was released this morning. And as you can see, overall about 49% of the contiguous U.S. was in a type of drought from moderate to exceptional drought. And this is about 2 percentage points higher than it was about 4 weeks ago. And just by looking at the map, you can see that much of the West was in drought. approximately 92% of the West was in drought, and about 50% of the West was experiencing extreme to exceptional drought conditions. Drought was also present across much of the High Plains, the South, and across small portions of the Northeast and the Southeast. Drier than average conditions during the last few weeks led to some drought deterioration or development across parts of the Western Great Plains and the Southeast. But there were some improvements along parts of the northern parts of the Western region, as well as some isolated areas across the High Plains. Outside of the Okhonus, about 54% of the Hawaiian Islands were experiencing drought. Been experiencing extreme to exceptional drought. As of today, Alaska is currently drought-free, while Puerto Rico had some areas of moderate drought. So that is all that I have for today. I will now turn it over to Allison Cobb.
Thank you so much for that. My name is Allison Cobb. I'm a research meteorologist at the Center for Western Weather and Water Extremes, and I'm going to summarize the exceptional atmospheric river event that we recently had in October. So now on to slide 8. An atmospheric river is a long, narrow corridor of concentrated moisture in the atmosphere. There were multiple atmospheric rivers that made landfall along the U.S. West Coast from the 19th to the 26th of October. The first two events produced AR4, or extreme conditions, in southwestern Oregon, and AR2 and AR3 conditions were observed elsewhere along the coast from San Francisco Bay Area to the Olympic Peninsula. The third atmospheric river reached AR5, or exceptional conditions, over California near Point Reyes due to the combination of strength and duration. You can see on the right-hand side of this slide, this is the atmospheric river scale, and you can see that the scale is dictated by the strength of the atmospheric river combined with the time of duration. The third atmospheric river was the strongest October atmospheric river to make landfall in the Bay Area in the last 40 years. So now on to slide 9, here is showing some of the precipitation from that event. On the left-hand side, this is the total amount of precipitation from the 19th to the 26th of October. There were portions of Northern California that received more than 15 inches of total precipitation from a combination of these three storms, which you can see in the yellow colors. Santa Rosa, marked by the star, had a 1,000-year rainfall event, where in 24 hours they received 7.83 inches of precipitation. The third atmospheric river received significant snow accumulations, more than 12 inches, in the Sierra Nevada, Washington Cascades, Sawtooth Range in Idaho, and in the Ruby Mountains in Nevada. On the right-hand side of slide 9, we can see the October precipitation related to normal precipitation. And any colors that you see in green and blue are showing that during October they received more precipitation than normal. You can see in a large area of Northern California, they experienced more than 300% of the normal October rainfall. For further information on this storm summary, please see the website link below. And now on to impacts on slide 10. There were large storm rain, total rainfall results resulted in rock slides and minor landslides at various locations in Northern California. Recent burn scars saw enhanced runoff containing ash sediment, though no impactful post-wildfire debris flow were reported. The storm precipitation was high, but the rainfall intensity was likely insufficient to trigger impactful debris flow. There were strong winds observed, with wind gusts of more than 70 miles an hour in the Marin Headlands and Santa Cruz Mountains, and wind gusts of more than 50 miles an hour in the Sacramento Valley and western foothills of the northern Sierra Nevada. During this event, the combination of heavy rain and high winds downed trees and caused power outages throughout the Bay Area. There was also riverine flooding on the Russian River in Sonoma County. And finally, on to slide 11. There were modest increases in reservoir levels throughout California, and these were modest because of the very dry antecedent conditions. Wildfire concern was largely mitigated in central and northern California. These two images show the state of the drought from the U.S. Drought Monitor. On the left-hand side, this was the state on October the 12th, and on the right-hand side, this was after the rain event on November the 2nd. So some areas surrounding the Sierra Nevada and the Southern Central Valley saw improvements, but dry soil moisture largely persists in the region. It is still very early in the season, and we'll need subsequent precipitation events in the wet season to get out of drought conditions. To receive any alerts on atmospheric river landfall, please see the website link below. And with that, I will hand over to Jana. Thank you.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. This is Jana Infante, meteorologist from the National Weather Service Climate Prediction Center. I'd like to bring your attention now to slide 12 of the presentation, which shows the current sea surface temperature observations and the forecast for the El Nino Southern Oscillation. The figure on the left shows the current sea surface temperature anomalies in the tropical Pacific. Blue shading in this figure represents areas where sea surface temperatures are below normal, and orange to red areas correspond to areas where sea surface temperatures are above normal. The light to medium blue on the map is found along and surrounding the equator indicates that, on average, sea surface temperatures are currently below normal. Sea surface temperatures in what is called the Niño 3.4 region of the tropical Pacific are roughly 0.8 degrees Celsius below normal, which puts us in the La Niña phase of the El Niño Southern Oscillation. La Niña conditions begin when sea surface temperatures in the Niño 3.4 region fall to 0.5 degrees Celsius below normal. You will see that anticipated La Niña impacts over the U.S. will play a large role in the outlooks I will be showing today. The chart on the right shows the ENSO forecast from early November through June, July, August 2022. This chart indicates the probability of La Niña, shown with the blue bars, neutral conditions, shown with the gray bars, or El Niño, shown with the red bars, for sea surface temperatures in the Niño 3.4 region. La Niña conditions are likely to continue through the Northern Hemisphere winter with about a 90% chance. Probabilities are lower in the Northern Hemisphere spring, beginning with March, April, May, with about a 50% chance of La Niña. And finally, chances for the neutral phase of the El Niño Southern Oscillation being most likely for April, May, June through June, July, August. And shifting now to slide 13, which shows our monthly outlooks for the month of December. These outlooks represent the probabilities that the mean temperature or total precipitation for the month will be below, near, or above normal. The red and orange shading on the map to the left indicates areas where above normal temperatures are most likely, while the blue shading indicates areas with below normal temperatures are most likely. And for precipitation on the right, green shading indicates areas where above normal precipitation is most likely, and brown shading indicates areas where below normal precipitation is most likely. Looking first at the map on the left, the red and orange areas in the southwest and southern Great Plains indicate that this area of the U.S. is favored to have warmer than normal temperatures in December. This is especially true for the area broadly surrounding New Mexico and Arizona, where there is greater than 50% chance of above normal temperatures. The anticipated warmth is based on good agreement from climate model support and La Niña impacts. In the Ohio Valley, Great Lakes, Northeast, and Mid-Atlantic, there is equal chance of above, near, and below normal temperatures. Mixed results from climate models and uncertainty the timing of the ending of the negative phase of the North Atlantic Oscillation, or NAO, which is a weather phenomenon over the North Atlantic Ocean that is characterized by changes in the strength of two recurring pressure patterns in the atmosphere, one centered near Iceland and the other near the Azores Islands, which can impact weather patterns in the United States, leads to equal chance of above, near, and below normal temperatures. Equal chance of above, near, and below normal temperatures is also indicated for the Pacific Northwest, Northern Rockies, and Northern Great Plains due to weak model guidance or guidance that conflicts with our expected La Niña impacts. Enhanced chance of below normal temperatures are indicated over southern Alaska, given expected La Niña impacts and cold coastal sea surface temperatures. Moving on to precipitation, shown in the figure on the right side, the areas of green in the Pacific Northwest and Northern Rockies indicate favored chances for above normal precipitation in December, while brown areas in the southern part of the U.S. indicate favored chances for below normal precipitation in December. The above normal precipitation in the Great Lakes region is consistent with expected La Niña impacts and also possibility for lake effect precipitation. These areas of above normal precipitation in the Pacific Northwest and Northern Rockies also consisted with expected La Nina impacts, as is the large area of below normal precipitation in the southern tier of the U.S. Finally, a small area of favored below normal precipitation is found on the southern coast of Alaska, consistent with cooler temperatures forecasted for the region. And now looking forward to the three-month period from December 2021 through January and February 2022, I'd like to bring your attention to slide 14. These outlooks represent the probabilities that the mean temperature or total precipitation for the season will be below, near, or above normal. During this period, potential impacts from La Nina are seen in the outlook for both temperature and precipitation. Looking at the figure on the left, warmer than normal temperatures are likely in most of the southern half and eastern third of the United States, with colder than normal temperatures in the Pacific Northwest, northern Idaho, Montana, and western North and South Dakota, and much of Alaska. Model guidance is consistent with expected impacts during a moderate La Nina winter, and models favor colder than normal conditions in Alaska. Looking now at the figure on the right, drier than normal conditions are likely for the southern tier of the U.S. from California eastward to the southeast. Wetter than normal conditions are likely for the Pacific Northwest, Northern Rockies, Great Lakes, and Ohio Valley. These conditions are expected given the moderate La Nina and considering model guidance. Slightly elevated chances of wetter than normal conditions are shown over the Great Lakes due to potential for lake effect precipitation. Model guidance favors drier than normal conditions over southern Alaska and wetter than normal conditions over northwest Alaska, but is weaker conflicting for precipitation in central Alaska, so equal chances of above, near, or below normal precipitation is indicated for the remainder of the state. And finally, turning to the drought outlook on slide 15, the brown areas on the map indicate where drought is currently ongoing and expected to continue. This includes much of California and the Southwest, with some areas of ongoing and expected drought continuation stretching up to North Dakota and parts of Minnesota. Yellow shading on the map indicates areas in which drought development is likely, which can be seen over parts of New Mexico and western Texas. These areas coincide with the areas of drier than normal precipitation expected due to La Nina impacts. The tan shading on the map indicates areas where drought is predicted to remain but improve, and green shading indicates areas where drought removal is likely. The Pacific Northwest, Idaho, Montana, and much of Wyoming are favored to have drought improvement and some small areas of drought removal given the wet pattern expected in this region. Similarly, some areas of drought removal in the southern Great Lakes is also favored to occur. Drought removal or improvement is indicated for much of Hawaii, with Puerto Rico having some small areas of persistent drought. And that's it from the Climate Prediction Center. Thank you everyone for your time, and back to you, John.
All right, thanks so much, Jonna. We will now take specific questions from the call participants. Please identify who you would like to answer the question if possible. And Kelly, could you please remind the call participants how they can ask a question and then queue up the first question?
Absolutely. If you would like to ask a question, please press star one, unmute your phone, and record your name. And of course, if you are able to, the person that you would like to direct the question to. If you would like to withdraw your question, press star two. And again, to ask a question, press star one. We do have a question waiting. Our first question is from Brian Sullivan. Brian, your line is open.
Thank you. Given the healthy atmospheric rivers we've had in October and also this week, is there anything you can extrapolate out as to how the rest of the season will go? I mean, is this a foreshadowing of what we can expect, or is this these just kind of one-offs early in the season?
Hi there, Brian. I assume that question's for me. It's Alison Cobb here. Thank you for that question. So at the moment, we don't have any seasonal predictions looking through the rest of the winter. I could suggest that we tend to have some of the biggest storm events in a weak La Nina, and there is some indication that we may remain in those conditions. Southern California has a better relationship with this weak La Nina, whereas Central and Northern California, we have a much weaker relationship. So really at the moment, there's not much that can be said for the rest of the atmospheric river season.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Tom Henry. Tom, your line is open.
Yeah, I caught you saying that Ohio had its warmest October. I was wondering if other Great Lakes states also experienced record warmth in October. And a follow-up to that, I wanted just to clarify, when you predict precipitation, if you can differentiate between snow and rain, or I think I've heard before, it's just precipitation and you can't always predict whether it's snow or rain.
Hello, this is Ira Sanchez-Lugo. I can answer the first part of your question. You wanted to know if there were other, I believe you said, near Great Lakes states that had warmest October on record?
Right, correct.
Okay, so Ohio and Maryland were the only ones that had the warmest, but this is for mean temperature. I do know that there were several states across the Midwest and Northeast that did experience the warmest, had the warmest minimum temperatures for the month. And then, but in terms of average temperature, it was only Ohio, and there were several states that had a top five warm October.
Is there any way to explain that? Why those two would?
The average temperature, why it wasn't ranked warmest for other states? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, like contiguous states to Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, and others, were they close to having record warmth in October or not? I'm just curious.
There were several states that had like their third warmest, so it was in the top third, top three warmest October. So that's still significant. But if you would like more specific for each state, I would highly recommend that you email John, and like that, I can send you the specific data for each one of those states if that works for you.
Yeah, that's fine. And then I also just wanted to clarify the precipitation, if that can be differentiated between lake effect snow and rain, or if there's, if there's any way of saying that a increase in precipitation would be one or the other.
Hi, this is John Infante from the Climate Prediction Center. So for the monthly and seasonal outlooks, precipitation, it does include the chance of either rain or snow, depending on where you are. So when we say precipitation, it's any chance of water falling from the sky.
I got it. That's what I thought. Thanks.
At this time, there are no other questions in the queue, so I will hand it back to you, John.
All right. Thanks so much, Kelly. And Tom, if you're still on, feel free, again, like Ira said, to reach out to me, and I will connect you with the climate expert who can give you all that specific state information. If there are no other further questions, I will wrap up the call. First, I'd like to thank all of our speakers for their time and to everyone else for participating in the conference call. I will end by reminding you to mark your calendar for a couple of upcoming events. The release of the November 2021 U.S. Climate Report is scheduled for December 8th. And the release of the November 2021 Global Climate Report is scheduled for December 13th. Lastly, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov Media Advisory site later today. And if you have any further informational needs, please email me at, and I'll spell it again, nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. And my contact information is also available at the top of the media advisory. Thank you.
And we do have one more question in the queue, if you like.
Oh, we do. Okay. I think, yeah, if we have one more, let's go for it then.
Okay. All right. Our next question is from Moe Boucher. Moe, your line is open.
Hi there. Sorry about that late entry. I got on late, but I was hoping someone could just address the increased probability of warmer than average and drier than average winter in Texas and how the La Nina, you know, the way La Nina is shaping up might inform those predictions.
Hi, yes, this is Jana Infante from the Climate Prediction Center. So the outlook for December and the outlook for December, January, February does take the La Nina conditions into effect for these particular outlooks. So if you're looking at the monthly and the seasonal, as you said, there is an enhanced probability for warmer temperatures and below normal rainfall over Texas and the southern part of the U.S. So that's fairly typical of what we would see from a La Nina winter. And when we look at La Nina winters, we base that on a lot of different ways of looking at it, such as composites and statistical methods for looking at how the atmospheric pressure that is stemming from a La Nina event will impact the pressure systems over the U.S. and then lead to these particular warm and dry signals.
Thank you.
Yep.
And again, there are no other questions in the queue. Sorry.
Okay, there are. Okay, thank you so much, Kelly. All right, well then, thank you everyone for joining again.
That concludes today's call. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time. Speakers, please allow a moment of silence and stand by for your post-conference.